This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And the old sous chef of the garden, Frank Proctor, yes. Saying good morning, one and all. And I was just remarking, I used a favorite little word of mine to describe conditions of the wind. Dank.
Dank.
Just dark and dank.
And I said it was like a scotch mist, which I think is much, much happier way to explain the weather.
That sounds like a nice scotch drink.
Exactly.
Yeah, have Irish a little scotch
whiskey
mist.
Scotch mist.
Well, here we are on a Saturday morning once again. Mm-hmm.
Saturday morning.
A dank. But tomorrow, Santa arrives in Toronto.
It's true.
That's going to be something special.
Always is.
Yes, indeed. And we are here to make your day something special. Well, particularly if you have a problem.
Or you want to share something good.
Yes.
We love hearing problems, but we also love hearing ideas and tips and techniques that people use.
And kind of nice that our operator today is Justin Eacock, who is a
born
burgeoning
again.
Gardener himself.
Exactly.
Okay. So anyway, all sorts of good stuff happening. If you call in and be part of the show, we would love that. Mm-hmm. In Toronto, here's how you get a hold of Charlie. 416-360-0740. Then anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. Our little mantra goes this way: call early, call often, one question per call. You can always call back in. And if you're a first-time caller, let Justin know. And when you get to the airwaves, you'll hear that just preceding your arrival here. That's your wings.
Your garden wings.
Yeah. Well, what do you have there, whole bunch of info?
A couple of things going on. I mean, we're getting close to Christmas, so most of the horticultural societies have probably slowed down with their meetings. But tomorrow, the Toronto Rhododendron Society is hosting their annual general meeting from 12 noon until 4 p.m. at the Toronto Botanical Garden, 777 Lawrence Avenue East, right at Leslie. Two lectures by Betty Ann Addison from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Number one is Hybridizing Hardy Rhodos, and number two, Woodland Companions for Rhododendrons. So if you're interested, obviously everyone is welcome. Go on down to the TBG tomorrow at noon. Now, an annual event that happens also at the Toronto Botanical Gardens is the Holiday Market and Open House. That's happening not this Thursday, but the Thursday after, so Thursday, November 30th, for all day, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., free, open to the public. So it's a big, the place is all decorated up. Mm-hmm. The gift shop, of course, is open with some very beautiful, funky decor and garden lovers kind of gifts. There is food. There's all kinds of artisans there selling some of their homemade foods and honeys and jams and who knows what. There's quite a few exhibitors going to be there. There's also a complimentary coat and parcel check. So, you know, the whole thing is just a lot of fun and quite a beautiful place to hang out. Unique terrariums, for example, home-baked treats. So lots going on. So 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. on November the 30th. Again, open to the public. If you are a member, 10% off in the gift shop. So don't forget that.
Okay. All sorts of good stuff.
Oh, I have some homework, too.
Oh, do you?
I can get to that maybe after our break.
Okay. All right.
From last week. Remember Rita.
That's right.
Rita,
we had a whole batch of homework to do. Okay. we'll put Charlie to work in just a couple of moments here after we take a wee bit of a break. Here on Zoomer Radio AM 740, The Garden Show on the air live and direct from the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, let's take a little trip to a spot that Elvis shows up to a lot. That's up in the Collingwood area. There's Diane. Good morning. Welcome to the show, Diane.
Morning.
Good morning,
Frank and Charlie. Yes, it is a November morning up
here. Yeah, you got it.
Yes,
well
yes.
said.
And we have had a little bit of snow. Actually, some of it stayed for a few days. And so everything's kind of looking yucky out in my garden.
Yeah. Wet and muddy.
When I started this garden 5 or 6 years ago, I called you and you gave me some very good tips on how to build it from nothing in our new home. Mm. And it's done extremely well.
Good.
So the only thing I'm really having a problem with is my Aurora Red hydrangeas. Mm-hmm. Now, they're on the south side of the house, right under the window where I am here looking out to the road. Mm. And, excuse me, they haven't bloomed a whole lot. And this year, two of them didn't bloom at all. And the other one only had a few blooms. But my friend is going to help me with some compost in the spring.
Right. Probably a good idea. So,
yeah, that'll help. But the thing is, I've gotten two conflicting remedies or pruning procedures. Mm-hmm. One is, which I have been doing every year, is in the fall, I cut them to about, 10 or 12 inches high.
Okay.
Cut them right down. And then they grow back, but they never get as big as I envisioned that they would because they have to start fresh every year. So this year I talked to someone at the garden center where I actually bought them, and she said, don't prune them right back at all. She said, just deadhead them, and then you'll have a good start for next spring. However, what's happened now is that now that they've had this cold and wet and snowy stuff, they're all wilting and looking, like they're going to die.
Oh, well, yeah, don't worry about that. That's the leaves are still hanging and they're just looking quite limp. And yeah, they will eventually fall off. So, okay, so you're just wishing that they were a slightly larger shrub when they are doing their thing during the spring and summer and fall. So for sure, not doing as extreme of cutting back will contribute to a larger shrub. Deadheading will be important. And certainly I do all my hydrangea trimming in the spring. And I base it on live wood versus dead wood. And you can tell in the spring when you look at what of course will be happening in the spring is you'll have all those sticks sticking up out of the ground. Mm-hmm. The leaves will have dropped off. The flowers may still be hanging on a little bit by a thread. So you will definitely be cutting out the flowers. Mm-hmm. But when the plant starts to grow in the spring, the hydrangeas put out very obvious fat, juicy buds, and they're in pairs along these stems. So you know you're going to cut back to where you see live buds. So anything that's beyond, say that right now, or when you go out in the spring, the branches, the stems are roughly 2 feet tall. So you see green buds all the way up the stem to about the 18-inch point. That's where you'll cut. You'll cut where you see, just above where you see a pair of fat, juicy buds. Okay. And just make it so that the plant is fairly well balanced so that you don't have sort of an 18-inch stem on one side and a 6-inch stem on the other side. Try and, work with the lowest common denominator.
Make it uniform.
So they're it's balanced.
So what should I do now?
Now, I wouldn't do anything. Leave them alone.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
so in
let
the spring,
them be.
Cut them down to 2 feet then?
Well, cut them to where you see live wood, where you see the live buds.
Where I see the live buds on each bud. Okay.
Yeah. So rather than sort of going down to 9 inches, just go take out anything dead, allow what is alive to grow, and they will, as a result, be a larger shrub.
Perfect.
And compost, a great idea to get some flowers going.
Yeah, I want the flowers.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's quite a beautiful hydrangea, for sure.
Oh, yeah, these Aurora Reds are very pretty.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Super. Well, thank you so much for your help, and I'll keep listening as I do every Saturday morning.
Yeah, all right.
Let us know how you're doing. Okay.
I will.
Thank you, Diane.
Take care.
Okay, nice to have you with us here on this Saturday. Mm-hmm. Out in Whitby, there would be Ruth. Good morning, Ruth. Welcome to the show.
Actually, it's Josephine.
Morning,
but
Hi, Ruth.
Yeah.
Hi, Charlie. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you doing?
Thank you for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
This is a simple question, and you probably think, boy, she doesn't know much about gardening, and that's true. I was given an African violet in May for Mother's Day from one of my granddaughters, and it's doing very well, except it doesn't flower. I haven't had any flowers on it.
Not even when you got it, were there flowers?
No.
Oh, interesting.
And it's the leaves are strong and firm and doing very well. I've only lost two leaves, one tiny one and one a little bit bigger. And other than that, the leaves are just fine.
And
no flowers.
Have you fertilized it at all?
No.
Okay, so here's what you got to do. Number one, stop being so nice to it. So often with African violets, if we take super good care of them, you'll get lots and lots of leaves. But if you ignore that plant a little bit more and allow it to dry down slightly more than you are in between the waterings, you will find that it'll start flowering. However, I would highly recommend some fertilizer, and that you could use at this time of year, because African violets, when they're really happy plants, they bloom nonstop. They're like orchids. They can just bloom all the time.
Well, that's what I thought, and I used to do indoor plants more than I do now, and I thought, gee whiz, they always flowered. What is wrong with this one?
Yeah, it's likely a nutrient thing more than anything. Now, there's a number of different fertilizers out there that are specifically for African violets, and that's what I would recommend, is that you get a hold of, go to a garden center. You've got some there in Whitby. You can swing by and pick up. The one I've used in the past was called Granny's Bloomers, and it was one. And another one I've used that I've liked is called Power Caps for African violets. So either way, whatever's out there, just, pick something up, follow the instructions. When it's time to water, use that fertilizer when you're watering, and let the soil become quite dry. Feel the soil before you water again, to let it get, not desert dry, but quite dry.
Well, when I water it, I take the water out of our dehumidifier and use that because it's really clean water. And I've watered it usually. I check it regularly, and about every 2 weeks, maybe a little longer before I water it again.
Okay, that's...
Don't kill it with kindness.
No, that's good. I'm glad you're not... Yeah, don't water on the calendar. Water based on what the soil feels like.
Right,
so that's great.
I finger in and feel it.
Yep, exactly. Okay.
All right, well, thanks. I hope I get some flowers.
You let us know. You will, though. You will. Yeah. Little fertilizer is going to make all the difference.
Keep in touch, Ruth. Thank you very much. Okay. Have a great weekend, and thank you for joining us here on Zoomer Radio. And we're going to be back to say hi to Josephine out in Pickering, a regular caller. We'll be welcoming to the lines in just moments here on Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Now, you'd recognize his voice almost immediately, wouldn't you, Charlie, huh? From Pickering?
I would.
Josephine. Welcome to the show again, Josephine.
Hello there. How are you?
Good morning. Great. How are you?
Well, it's dull and damp, and what else
there
can
you
we
are.
Say?
Dank.
Yes.
Frank
terrible.
Says.
Terrible. What I'm calling about are the canna lilies. Mm-hmm. Now, I had bought them very, very late, and I do mean very, very late in the season. Mm-hmm. The season was almost finished. Mm-hmm. I didn't, because I knew I had to pick them up, I didn't plant them in the ground.
Okay.
Now, I haven't taken them out of the pots. Should I take them out of the pots and store them in a cool place underneath the steps in the basement?
Leave them in the pots.
Leave them in the pots.
You don't have to take them out of the pots.
Just put the whole thing underneath the steps.
Yeah, and they've been outside, right?
Well, they were outside, yes, definitely, and they'd stopped blooming, and I stripped them and cut them back with all the leaves and everything.
Right. So now it's just dark, cool for the rest of the winter, and then you're going to haul them out into the light around about April or May, early April, get some sunshine, get some light on them, and they'll start growing, and you're ready to put them outside once we're frost-free.
Yeah, when I figure out where I'm going to put them.
Yeah, you're right. They are tropical. So either way, you're always going to have to bring them in for the winter if you want them to survive.
Definitely.
And that's where the pots make it so simple. Just get big. You can leave them in pots. Just put them in bigger pots because canna tubers get really big.
I know they do. In fact, I see two babies coming out of both of them.
Yeah. They're great. No, I love cannas. So, good idea. Just leave them in the pots. Keep life simple.
Okay, thank you very much, and have a good weekend.
And the same to
you.
Thank you.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Let's see here. Let me repeat the phone numbers for you, okay? In Toronto area, please call 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Off to Cambridge we go, Charlie. And there's Bobby. Good morning, Bobby.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is becoming a habit. I called you a couple of weeks ago about another situation. I have a very sick hibiscus, and I know you covered this some time ago, but my hibiscus wasn't sick then. Mm-hmm. Now it is dying slowly. The leaves have turned yellow and are falling off. They have spots all over them, as well as the green leaves that have not turned yellow are also speckled quite badly. Mm. I am getting blooms.
So, okay.
I don't know what to do now.
So this is a tropical hibiscus that was outside for the summer, was it?
Yes, it was.
And when did you bring it in?
Oh, about a month ago.
Okay. And when you brought it in, it was all green leaves. And since it came in, it's a lot of the older leaves have been turning yellow. And the tips are probably still green. The small leaves on the very tips of the branches are green.
Yes.
And the older leaves have turned yellow. So,
yes.
You know what? I know you think it's sick, but actually what the hibiscus is doing is it's going through a bit of a shock. When it was outside, it had lots of light. When you brought it inside, even if you've got it in a super sunny window, it's still quite a bit less light than what it was getting when it was outside. So the leaves that grew outside and were happy out there are not happy with the lower light levels. So the plant responds by shedding those leaves and growing new ones, which will be able to photosynthesize quite effectively indoors.
Okay, it's not sprouting anything new. It's just they're just falling by handfuls, the green leaves.
No, it's, you know what, and the buds are, it is, like you said, there are buds and the flowers are progressing, so you're getting the flowers?
Okay.
So,
yes, I am.
Yeah, because
yes,
it's interesting that you're making this call because I brought in my hibiscus. I was a little late, so it had been lightly frosted maybe 2 weeks ago. It currently has probably one leaf on it. It has dropped, like you said, handfuls of leaves. It's just the floor covered in leaves. So I'm out there like raking my living room floor because there's so many leaves from the hibiscus. All bright yellow. But the plant is fine. It really, really is fine. What I'm going to do is I'm going to cut it back because mine got so much of a frost that it actually blew all the buds off at the same time. They all dropped. So you've got some buds. You probably don't want to do some pruning or you won't get the flowers. But once all those buds have opened and you don't see any more buds coming, don't hesitate to do some cutting back. In the meantime, only water it when it needs water. Don't worry about fertilizer or anything like that at this time of year. But you will find if you do some cutting back, you will force out some new growth. Just be very, very careful that when there are so few leaves, the plant will not be using water the way you would expect it to. So no water until it really needs water, when it's quite dry. Thorough watering.
So the fact that there's black blotches all over the leaves doesn't mean anything?
The black blotches are actually part of the process of these leaves saying, I give up. This is not a happy time. I want to go back to the earth, and new leaves will grow, and they will be fine.
Okay.
You will not have spots on those.
Because I was looking for aphids, and I actually sprayed it in the bathtub yesterday with dish detergent.
Okay. Well, it's a good point. Keeping it, doing a very close look, even with a magnifying glass, make sure that you don't see any evidence of any, little critters that might have come in on it. But I wouldn't spray on principle. Just spray if you actually see something there that needs to be annihilated.
But honestly, I'm sure
it's just the plant is responding to lower light levels.
Okay. Now, supposing I did see something, down the road, I have a towel underneath it in the tub. Mm. Will those, whatever, if there is anything, will they embed themselves in the towel? Like, do I need to take it out, shake it out, and put it through the laundry? Because I have mandevillas in the same room.
Right.
And I didn't know whether these guys, if there is anybody that doesn't belong.
Right.
If they would transfer over to them,
they can, depending if what the insect might be. Some insects are super slow moving. Some are very quick. So, and they can travel on you, right? You're doing your, plant care from one plant to the next plant, and you can certainly carry things with you as you go. That's insects are very clever that way. They find out all kinds
of
ways.
Transport themselves.
Exactly.
Wow.
They borrow people and animals all the time. So, very good point. You know, keep an eye. Always look closely for any kind of infestation, something that doesn't belong. And if you do see something that doesn't belong, then you're right. A spray is appropriate. And, you know, keeping the distance between the plants is also a good idea, just in case, you know, in case there is something there that might jump across.
And dish detergent is okay to spray with if I should?
Dish soap is perfect. Dish detergent will not kill insects. That'll give the plant a nice wash. It'll also give the insects a nice wash if there are any insects there, but it will not kill them. So it's not detergent, it's soap. And if you don't have soap, because sometimes it's hard to get soap, you can buy safer soap, which is all ready to go.
Okay, Bobby.
All right.
That's great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate your help.
Thank you, Bobby, from Cambridge. Okay. Nice to have you here with us on The Garden Show. You know, being the host of a show Monday through Friday from 10 to 11, the Theater of the Mind,
yes.
I'm always intrigued by anything that has to do with old-time radio. And I occasionally get a note from the chap who operates a wonderful little shop up there in Palgrave, Ontario, old-time radio shop.
Ah.
And that's where our next caller is coming from, Palgrave. There's Mary, and she is a first-time caller.
Wings, yeah. There you go. Welcome,
Hi,
Mary.
Hi. Well, you answered a lot of my hibiscus questions, but that's not what I called in for.
Okay.
I called in about a bougainvillea that I bought at the end of the season, and it was supposed to be in a hanging pot. I didn't want it to hang, so I put some trellis in to go upright, and it has gone upright, and now it's about 5.5 feet tall, and
wow.
I would like to know if I can cut that off, because it's getting much too tall.
Sure, you can cut it. The one reason we sometimes hesitate to cut is if there's buds or flowers on the plant.
It flowered shortly after I bought it, and it's all done flowering. It's all nice green leaves right now.
Perfect, yep. Perfect time. You can cut now.
Can I cut off about 2 feet of it?
Yep, you can. You can cut that much back, but recognize that you could do a small pruning now for shape and just for, you know, keeping it safe. And then the best time to really do a pruning that's going to set the plant up for the next growing season would be in February or March, when the days are starting to get longer, the plants really respond to a hard pruning and, you know, send out all kinds of new growth at that point. Any pruning you do now, you shouldn't see a ton of new growth, but it's fine. You can certainly prune whatever you need to.
I want it for size right now. Mm-hmm. However, that was meant to be a hanging bougainvillea,
yes.
So it has 1, 2, 3, 4, about 5 upright things now. Is it ever going to look like a standing up bougainvillea?
Well, that's the way they grow. They grow with these long, the stems tend to be soft, and that's where that hanging thing comes in. But you can certainly train it, like you said, with a trellis, some little twist ties or whatever, actually feeding.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. I've
feeding
got
it through the
that go onto the onto the stakes.
Yeah, and do whatever pruning you want to do now, because we're not expecting any flowers at this point. And then if you needed to prune anything else, do that in March.
And the things that I cut off, instead of throwing them out, can I root them, do you think?
You could try. They will be slow to grow roots just because of the time of year. But yes, indeed, you can certainly try. Just expect that it could take more than a month, might even take as long as 2 months.
That's okay. I'm patient.
Get some roots. Good. Gardeners have to be. A little rooting hormone will speed up
rooting. I have
that. Perfect.
So okay.
That's good.
Get that happening.
Thank you so very much.
Perfect.
Okay, Mary.
Have a great day.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for joining us here. And don't be a stranger. The door's always open here at the
Garden
Show.
Welcome, Matt.
Go ahead.
My homework.
Absolutely.
I want to just get this because I thought of it when I mentioned safer soap.
Right.
As an insecticide, this reminded me that last week Rita called from Richmond Hill. She's indicated that she had moss growing on her paving stones and her walkways.
Yeah.
And it was getting quite frustrating for her because whenever the moss gets wet, it's very slippery. And she was just like, how do you get rid of it? So, a couple suggestions here. Number one, and I think I mentioned this last week, is if you can do anything to increase the amount of light getting to that area. So, if the walkway is under a tree or a canopy of a tree, opening that canopy up a bit, maximizing sunlight will always lower the amount of moss that can grow, because moss does not like bright sunshine. The other thing now, just thinking about sort of things that we have at home we can work with. So pressure washing with a pressure washer and a nice stiff brush can be a way, because it's ultimately, that's what you're going to have to do.
Yeah,
is,
those pressure washers are amazing.
Yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, you can loosen up the moss with the pressure washer. You can also consider mixing up chlorine bleach, half or equal parts water and bleach. Put it in a little spritzer bottle. Get out there and spritz the bleach and water onto those mossy areas. Again, that brush.
Yeah.
Scrape, scrape.
Very good sound effect here.
Well, I was doing it. Yeah. Better make the sound effect. So scraping with our stiff brush. If you don't want to use bleach, then you could use vinegar and water. Even baking soda can be used to try and annihilate moss. So you would put the baking soda on top of the mossy stones, leave the baking soda overnight, get out the next morning, get your stiff brush.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, if you are using the chlorine bleach idea or the vinegar idea and you're spritzing that onto the stones, be very careful you don't spray any of your plants, because bleach or vinegar will hurt the plants. So that's just, you know, be very specific that those sort of things only get onto the mossy stones. If all of that, none of that is working and the moss is still happily growing, then you've got to go to your garden center and you've got to pick up a commercial product. And there are commercial products out there, moss removers. One of them is made by Safers. It's called Safers Moss and Algae Killer and Surface Cleaner. So, you know, again, that you could always consider buying something. But for now, I'd be inclined
give
to
a
try
shot at the other thing.
Yeah,
sure.
Some of these other things that you might just have at home.
Well, you've done a fine bit of homework there.
There you
and,
go.
And you're going to be back into that hopefully next week.
Yeah.
Back to school.
Back to school. Yeah. I've been one of those striking faculty. So, we're being legislated back.
Well, I'm happy particularly, well, for everybody.
For the students.
Boy, that's a long time. Away from the classroom.
It is.
Okay.
And they're going to be going like, you expect me to remember what you taught me like 5 weeks ago?
I know. Exactly.
I know. It's going to be a real test.
Oh, boy. Well, hopefully it comes to an end soon.
Yeah.
We're going to take a little bit of a break here, but I'll come back and I'll get my bell-ringing arm in good shape for Daniel right here in Toronto after these words.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie just witnessed the sous chef of the garden reaching for the bell.
There he goes.
Hey, there it is. First-time caller Daniel online from Toronto. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. First of all, I want to say how much I love your show.
Thank you.
Very informative, and I just love it. I just love it.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Charlie, I was going to comment on something. This past summer, I went to the CNE, and I saw something that really, really made me sad. That beautiful centuries-old elm tree was dying of Dutch elm disease, and and I was wondering if anything could have been done to save it.
So Dutch elm disease, as you recognize, is a disease that kills trees, elm trees, and it is a fungal disease, and the fungus is spread by beetles. So it is possible to try and ward off that disease once it's infected a tree if it's caught early enough, and obviously the money has to be spent so that it's it's a pruning job, and then it's a fungicide that's actually injected into the tree.
Yeah, this elm tree apparently was one of the oldest, the oldest standing elm trees in Ontario. It was about, over 200 years old.
Oh, wow!
And it survived all this time without contracting Dutch elm disease.
Huh.
But finally, something happened and it succumbed.
Well, it's too bad. I mean, remember as well, trees do have a finite life. Some trees live hundreds and hundreds of years. Some trees live 10 or 20 years, depending on the genus, right? So, like, birch trees are not considered a long-lived tree versus, like, a sugar maple, which lives five times longer than the average birch. Just that's their genetics.
Right.
So recognize that it's, the elm. And the conditions in Toronto have changed a lot in the last 200 years, 100 years, in terms of pollution. And many trees do not cope well with the kind of air pollution that we now have that wasn't there back when they were planted.
Yeah. Well, that's very informative. Thanks for the information. I really appreciate it.
Ah, my pleasure. Don't be a stranger.
Yeah,
call
join us anytime.
Okay, I will. Thanks very much.
Okay, yeah. You bet. Always nice to hear from the listeners who get to be regular listeners, you know. Mm-hmm. So you get up on a Saturday morning and you can just visualize folks just pouring that first or second cup of coffee. Okay, they're on. Let's hear them. Yeah.
Click
okay.
on that radio. Before we go to any more callers, just want to share something that I have had a request to share. Remember that famous recipe, the what do we do with our green tomatoes?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Frost is coming. Tomatoes are still there. Got to pick them, but they're green. So there's that green tomato jam recipe that I'm going to share with you. It's very simple. You need 3 cups of green tomatoes, 2 cups of white sugar, and 2 packages of either red or black raspberry Jell-O powder. Boil the tomatoes, the sugar, and the Jell-O powder all together for about 20 minutes. Then pour that mixture into nice clean jars. Once it cools off, you can freeze the jam or you can top the jam with the paraffin wax just to keep it safe and obviously store it as long as you need to. But it is an amazing jam. You really think it's raspberry jam, but it's made with green tomatoes and Jell-O powder.
There you go.
It's a great recipe.
That's simple. Yeah. All right. Off we go. Oh, maybe just around the corner here in Toronto.
Yeah.
There's Leslie. Good morning, Leslie. Welcome to the show.
Morning.
Morning.
I have a question that sort of follows up on what you've been doing, actually. I'm talking about a hibiscus plant, many plants, actually, and they got whitefly. And really bad infection, and it actually spread to another floor. What I did, I sprayed them and didn't seem to work. So I put them in a sealed plastic, huge sealed plastic clear bag, and they left them in the light. A lot of the white fly died. You could see they were dying. I've left them there. It's been about 2-3 weeks. The plant seems to be okay generally. My question is, if I just leave them there for a certain period of time, you know, a month or something, will it kill the eggs that are hatching?
Well, okay, so there's no insecticide in there at all? It's just
I did spray some insecticide.
Okay.
I put soap, and then I went and bought the Bug Be Gone and sprayed that as well.
Right. No, not as far as I know. The spray that you sprayed with should have killed on contact any living insects.
Right.
Whitefly is a drag, though, because just like the name sounds like, it's a white insect that flies.
Right.
And they fly quite quickly. So when you're spraying, they're hurriedly trying to get away from that spray. So that's where the plastic bag was probably a good idea, because it holds them into the bag. And even if you can get in under the plastic and do your spraying, it's going to be an effective way to kill the living insects. That should not have any effect on the eggs, though. The eggs will need to hatch. But it's a fairly quick hatch. It's about a 10-day process for eggs to be laid and hatch. So that just means you need to spray again roughly 11, 12 days after the first spray.
Which I did.
Okay.
Which I did. So I guess my question is, how long do I leave them all sealed? They are quite sealed in the bag, and I've sprayed again. I'm hoping that when the eggs hatch that they too will die.
Yes, because there will be some insecticide residue that you're hoping that the insect will run across and will ultimately kill the insect, particularly when they're young. They're always far more susceptible to the insecticides. So will this ultimately work before the hibiscus dies? Because ultimately the poor hibiscus is going to need to come out of the plastic.
Right.
Ultimately, it's going to need some carbon dioxide. And right now, there's oxygen building up like crazy inside the plastic bag, because that's what the plant is. When it respires, it uses carbon dioxide and it gives off oxygen. So you need to do some kind of gas exchange at some point, otherwise the plant will really start to suffer. Whitefly is a tough one. One of the ways I have thought with whitefly is I have done some pruning on the plant because you'll typically find all those eggs on the tips.
Right.
The youngest growth is where the eggs tend to be laid because that's where the whitefly does most of its damage is on the youngest growth, the newest growth. And so some pruning is one of the ways to remove the eggs carefully. You know, you're bagging and disposing of any of these pruning bits. You don't keep any of it on the property.
And what about in the soil? I thought the eggs were in the soil.
Not that I know of. Whitefly eggs should be on the plant.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, I can double check that. But as far as I know, whitefly eggs are all plant-based. Okie doke. So, yeah. So what are you going to do? It's working in the plastic bag, but don't leave it like that forever. Very soon, within the next week or two max, I'd be getting the plastic bag off. If you still see evidence of eggs, I would do some pruning at that point.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks,
okay,
thank Leslie.
You. Appreciate that.
Just thought I'd as well pass along Charlie's email in case you want to, you know, not go on the air, but send her a little note with a question. By all means, c.dobbin, that's D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. You are listening to The Gardening Show right here on Zoomer Radio, AM 740 and 96.7 FM in downtown Toronto. And we're going to scamper off to Scarborough next here on the show when we return.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, she is being a very efficient person with that on-off switch. That's, yeah, you've mastered
now,
this beautifully. You have.
Remembering.
I tell you. There's Jane in Scarborough. Good morning, Jane. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have an orchid that I bought a year ago, mm-hmm. and I've had these large, beautiful blooms that lasted all year. Well, mm-hmm. new blooms have come and gone. Mm-hmm. And now all the blooms have fallen off. And although the plant looks very healthy and happy, should I change the soil from the mossy kind of soil to bark, or should I just keep it in?
I would leave it. You know, it's time to transplant an orchid into a larger pot when it's just all roots. When the roots are everywhere, mm-hmm. Out the top, out the bottom. You know, they're just all over the place. Mm-hmm. And generally the right time to do that would be in the spring.
Okay.
'Cause remember, transplanting is stressful on plants. Mm-hmm. And as we're still getting into the dark days of winter. So adding two stresses to a plant can be a big problem. So wait until we're more into a growth cycle so that the plant can withstand the stress of transplanting if you can. And you probably just still have like the green stem where the flowers were.
Yeah.
So leave that alone as long as it's green. If it turns brown and starts turning brown from the tip and works its way all the way down to the base of the plant, mm-hmm. at that point you can cut it out, remove the brown flower stem. But for now, leave it, because sometimes you will get side shoots off of the green stem and end up with more flowers. And just, you're obviously doing something right, that the plant is looking good and strong and healthy. So main thing is just maintain it as you have been, water as you have been. If you're going to think about transplanting, do that in the spring. And consider orchid fertilizer, because orchids can bloom year-round. It does become a nutrient thing for them.
Okay, because I was told not to change the soil if there are blooms on it.
Right, because when a plant is blooming again, that's all its energy is going into creating those flowers.
Right.
When we do transplanting, we are expecting the plant to put a whole bunch of energy into root growth.
Okay.
So that's why you will often lose the flowers if you do the transplanting when it is flowering. But
yeah.
But I wouldn't be overly concerned. And I how you said you had it about a year.
Yeah.
So you're probably good for at least another year, if not, you know, 6 months to a year before you do any transplanting.
Okay. That's great.
Good
okay,
stuff.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Did you want to deal with an email there, or should we take a little call here from Fergus?
Let's take
Shirley,
a call.
Because she has a little tip, apparently.
I love tips.
Okay, let's do that. Hey, Shirley, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
Anyways, the hydrange, I cut it back, the blooms. When they're dry now, mm-hmm. 12 inches back, bring it in the house. I buy cans of gold spray paint or whatever
color
you like.
Oh, nice.
And I spray them. and you've got beautiful blooms all winter.
That's a great idea. They do dry beautifully, and then you spray them and make them even prettier. That's great.
Gee, oh, Shirley. That's great, and I've even got the blooms here from last year.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a beautiful bouquet for all winter.
Wow. We scooted you right in here, and I forgot. God, yeah, I've got
There's
to get
your wings.
Your wings.
You get garden wings to go with your hydrangea blooms.
Thank you.
Thanks for your tip. That's great.
And have a good day now.
Thank you very much. You enjoy the weekend.
Thank you.
Hydrangeas are a good example of a plant that can easily be brought indoors as an indoor blooming, you know, as Shirley said, you know, all winter bouquet.
Yep.
Nice.
Do we have time for one more caller, do you think?
I guess if we go really fast.
All right. Pat in Mississauga. Let's see how we do here. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Morning.
I'm calling not with a question, just to thank you for the wonderful tip that you gave me a number of years ago, or gave to all of us, to put Christmas cactus outside all summer.
Oh, good, yeah.
And it just worked so beautifully, and right now I'm so proud of my Christmas cactus.
Covered.
It's just blooming like crazy, and it's absolutely gorgeous, and it's about 10 years old. And,
nice.
And it just seems to really perk up when I put it outside, and I brought it in about 10 days ago.
Perfect.
So thanks for that great tip, and I really enjoy my Christmas cactus.
Good for you. Thanks for letting us know.
Okay. I love your show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Oh, what a nice call to end on.
Whew. Exactly.
We're going to have to get Pat to get her as a regular, I think.
That's right.
Call in at the end of every show.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pat.
Well, I'm telling you, this has been a very busy show, particularly for you, you know, having to jump into the fore with all the answers. And I got to say that whenever folks ask questions of Charlie, there are very few times that you don't automatically go right to your little noggin and know the answer, but you're very up quick on the draw with that computer. You're able to go right to the source and find the answer, you know?
Well, sometimes, yeah. Sometimes you just want, you know.
Verify.
Exactly, verify. Yeah. You know, I know a lot, but nobody knows everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot, though. I will say that. So sometimes I just like to be absolutely positive that I'm on the right track with whatever information I'm going to share.
So the rest of the day, what do you got planned?
Well, you're going to buy us breakfast.
Yes.
Steak and eggs.
Yeah. Dry toast.
Nope. Steak and eggs. No. Frank's paying.
we'll do that for sure. I'll be back 1:30 to 3:30 with some really wonderful music. All sorts of great memories up in music we'll be presenting. And weird stories, too.
Oh, good.
A little feature that I love to do.
Weird stories. And Frankie's Funny Bone,
yes.
too. Yes. I like
one. I got a good one today.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So I'm up to my, you know, yin-yang in birthdays. I'm going to a 3-year-old's birthday party this afternoon, and then I'm off to my dad's birthday party this evening, and it's an early birthday party for my dad, so we're going to have another one on his real birthday. It's nonstop. Had my daughter's birthday party last night. It's woof.
Sydney.
Birthday. Too many November babies.
Yeah.
But I love them anyway, so happy birthday to all those November babies. And we will, thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Justin. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.